We are so glad that you have chosen to be with us. In fact, if it's your first time with us, we are super excited that you've chosen to join us on the digital platform here at Crosspoint. And if we haven't met, my name's Kurt. It's great to meet you, and we would love to connect with you. So reach down if you haven't done that already and hit that connection card below the stream. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We'd love to connect, to pray for you. And if you're here every week, welcome back. We'd love for you to hit that as well so we can stay connected with you as well. Now, we, as you just heard, are in this brand new series called Reimagine Tomorrow. Really excited about this. It's like we have this open canvas in front of us. And you and I get to decide how we rebuild, re-architect, imagineer what the future looks like. And so over these next 5 weeks, we're really going to look at some of the core traits that Jesus teaches us and some of the disciples teach us that we can use to bounce back. And then we're going to think about some of the things that we want to reorient our lives around. Maybe some of the things we've learned over the last few weeks. So really excited you're joining us today. And today is going to be about resiliency. Resiliency. And resiliency is really the first step in bouncing back. And so that's what resiliency is. In fact, resiliency is bouncing back. It's when we get knocked to the mat, when we take the punch, get knocked down, we pop back up and we bounce back, we get back in the game. So this is what we're going to look at today. And obviously we've had a pretty big disruption over these last 10 weeks. And the crazy thing about this disruption is every single person on this planet has experienced it. No one is void of it in the entire world. And yeah, it's not just the big disruptions that we have to learn how to bounce back from. We also have to learn how to bounce back from the daily disruptions. Things like, you know, maybe the air conditioning going out, or maybe your car not starting, the battery dies, or your computer, you know, just won't fire up the way that you need it to, and you're, you know, running tight on a meeting, or maybe it's something to do with your job, or maybe it has something to do with some prodigal kids or aging parents, or maybe it's, you know, prodigal parents and aging kids. Maybe it's something with new health condition that you're dealing with, or a job scare. Whatever it is, there is a whole litany of things that we can actually, you know, experience that disrupt our daily life. And many of these are just a blip on the radar, if we're honest. And yet, there's some that totally just kind of upend our world as we've been experiencing over these last few weeks. One futurist, he put it this way, he said, change is avalanching on our heads, and most people are grotesquely unprepared to cope with it. And that's really accurate, isn't it? I mean, that's really what we have been experiencing over these past 10 weeks or so. And you know, as much as we thought we were prepared, this thing has kind of rocked our world. And so this is why understanding resilience and this idea of what it means to bounce back, what it means to get off the mat, to you know, take the punch and get back up and keep going, why this is going to be so, so important as we go into this next season. So I want to kind of give you a word picture today, and I want to show this to you because I think this will help us understand the importance of resiliency. And so as you think about this and as you see this, I want you to imagine kind of where you are in this process, because this is a really interesting process that you and I are in right now as we think about what it means to bounce back. So we're going to title this picture Bounce Back, and it's this kind of picture has a y-axis and it has an x-axis. And so here at the bottom is going to be time, and then here on the y-axis is going to be our morale. And you know, one of the things that happens when we do this and we experience disruptions is all of a sudden we kind of have this change that hits us, and it's almost like a blip in our day, and we've then this moment of denial. We're like, oh my gosh, did this really happen? And then all of a sudden, it just starts this downward decline, and then we kind of hit the bottom, and we hit the valley. And then we begin to climb out of it, and we begin to realize there's a way out of this experience. And so it's interesting because as we look at this, you know, we've all experienced this in some way, shape, or form. I mean, you've had some change hit your life, whether it's over the last 10 weeks, but you've had other things you've experienced, moments of brokenness, moments of disruption that have caused you to go, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this. And then somehow you begin to see that there is a way out, and you begin to even realize that things could even be better on the other side when we get there. Now, somebody way smarter than me came along a number of years ago and realized that if you just think about this process of the changes and the trials and the things we go through that cause disruptions, you could almost perfectly lay the stages of grief over the top of it, and it would look the same. In fact, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, 40 or 50 years ago, identified the stages of grief, and it actually begins here. She said it begins with denial. And so we have this moment where we're like, oh my gosh, is this really happening? Surely this isn't happening. Surely this isn't real right here. And then we begin to move to this phase known as anger. And you know how anger works. You begin to blame people. You begin to get angry at people. They could have stopped this. They could have done something about this. And then the anger begins to turn toward us. We begin to blame ourselves. If I would have done something differently, maybe I wouldn't be in this situation. I know there's even some religious leaders that are stuck right here kind of thinking, well, we created this whole problem we've been dealing with. God's mad at us. I don't believe that. I don't see evidence of that at all. I think the thing we're experiencing right now is a normal part of life. You and I just have never experienced something that causes us to change our patterns this radically. And then you kind of go down, and this isn't necessarily part of the stages of grief, but we begin bargaining with God, right? We begin bargaining with people when we begin this downward decline. Listen, if your car battery goes out and your car won't start and you need to be somewhere, you bargain with your car, right? You've done this before. You're like, if you would just start for me, I promise I'll wash you later today. I mean, you begin to like make a deal with your car because we go into this bargaining mode trying to figure a way out of the downward spiral we're on. When you hit the bottom, you experience what's called despair. And despair is when we kind of hit the valley. It's where we kind of feel all of the things around us kind of caving in on top of us, that avalanching in. And then we begin to come out of this, and we begin to see that there is a way out of this. And this is where acceptance comes into play. And we begin to realize that they're in the midst of what we're experiencing, we begin to accept the reality, we begin to see that this is real, and we can actually begin to see the potential solutions out of what we're dealing with. And then eventually this leads us to a place where we are thriving. And what's crazy about this is not just surviving, not just getting through this curve right here, but actually thriving. And what's interesting about this is resilience, think about this, resilience is a catalyst. Resilience is a catalyst. See, resilience allows us to get through this curve with more speed. It takes us less time the more resilient we are. And the more resilient we are, the less stress we have when we go through this experience right here. Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed that kids seem to be way more resilient than adults. Have you ever noticed that? Let me just give you an example. A few years ago, our family decided to get back into having a dog in our home. We hadn't had a dog for a few years. Decided to try something different. We decided to try a small dog. We'd always had big dogs. And so we'd heard from one of my brothers that they had a dog they're needing to get rid of because of, you know, some challenges in their family. And so I went and took a look at it. I thought, you know, we'll look at this. It was called a Yorkie Poo, a Yorkshire Poodle. We never had one. Didn't shed. That was a benefit. So one evening, the kids and I went to look at the dog. Julie had a meeting, and she couldn't go. She said, hey, you go look at it. Come back. Tell me about it. We'll decide if we want it or not. And now, guys, let me just, like, hopefully give you a little heads up here on something you should never do. All right? Maybe you can learn from my mistake. So I went to my brother's. We looked at the dog. Kids fell in love with it. He had all kinds of energy. I just blindly committed to the dog without talking to my wife. It was the worst mistake I've probably made in a number of years. All right? Actually, there's been worse ones, but this is one I can tell you about. Now, because this was the dog from hell. I'm just going to be honest with you. It was the worst dog we have ever had in our home. And from day one, everything went downhill. And I'm sure she would have caught it had she been with me or had I gotten home and actually talked about this with her. But I didn't. And so hopefully you can learn from my mistake. So we get this dog home. We name him Lucky. And I'm telling you, I can tell you story after story about this. I'll just give you a couple. First of all, when we took him to the vet said, well, hey, what's the story behind his name? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, every dog named Lucky has a story. I'm like, well, he's lucky to be alive at this point. That's the story. And so, he would pee on my kids' beds. I'd go put him down. You know, we'd lay him down, say prayers with him, lean over, and put our elbow in a pool of pee. The dog did it. I mean, crazy. And then he would just, you know, drop piles in his crate because he was upset with us when we would leave and we'd crate him. So he'd just leave a pile for us. Not only would he leave a pile, he would roll around in it and spread it all over his crate. I mean, it's crazy. And in fact, a friend of mine said, you got a dirty dog. Dogs don't do that. They usually lay the pile and leave it alone. Yours likes to roll in it. That's a dirty dog. I'm like, we got a dirty dog. And so, I mean, so we couldn't crate him. And so like the final straw, number of other stories in the midst of this. Final straw was one day when we came home, he would get up on a stool while we were gone because we couldn't crate him and jump up on our countertop and eat off the counter while we were gone. And so we came home one time, and Lucky was on the counter, and I went over and said, Lucky, what are you doing? I picked him up, put him down, and threw my keys on the counter, and they slid across the counter, and as they did, I heard this corporate among my kids. I said, what's wrong? And they said, nothing's wrong, Dad. I mean, Lucky didn't poop on the counter or anything. I mean, you don't have to look over there. I'm like, what? And I looked back, and sure enough, that dog had laid a pile on my counter. And my keys were resting against it. And that was the final straw, all right? I told the kids, guys, this isn't going to work. Your dad is going to end up in jail because he's going to do something stupid to the dog, or the dog is not going to make it. One of two things is going to happen, and so you're going to have to choose between that dog and me. And they were in great distress, and oh my gosh, we want to keep this dog. So finally, we got to the place of helping them see that this was not a good idea for our family. And so we decided to find a good home for him, and so went to Craigslist, and I thought, well, I'll put him on there and sell him for a small price. I didn't want to just give him away. I wanted somebody to have a little skin in the game. And so I get on Craigslist. These dogs go for like $800-$900. I mean, these are like designer dogs. I'm like, there's no way somebody's gonna pay $800 for this dog. All right, so I halved it. All right, I said, I'm gonna put him up there for $400, and if you want to talk me down to $50, I'll let you have him for $50. I kid you not, within 12 hours, somebody called me wanting to come look at the dog. So guy came to our house, kids took off with my wife, so they weren't there during this interaction. And the guy was super nice, loved the dog, got down on the floor, played with them, just seemed like a great owner, and said he had these kinds of dogs when he was young. And he looked at me at one point and he said, these dogs are a lot of work, aren't they? And I said, yes, they are. You have no idea. And he said, and they require a lot of maintenance, don't they? I'm like, yes, they do. You have no idea. And he said, and they seem to be pretty hard to train. I'm like, yes, they are. I mean, he seemed to know these dogs really, really well. And so he played with them a little bit more. I said, I thought, this guy's never going to take this dog. He stands up, he pulls a wad of four $100 bills out of his pocket and says, sold. And he buys our dog. I'm like, you are kidding me. He didn't even bargain with me. He just took him. And so, you know, we were actually really elated. He found a good home, somebody who obviously understood how to care for a dog like this. Next step was we had to tell the kids. They came home, we shared with them, and there was, you know, some grief and crying and tears. And, you know, we sent them outside, and they went on playing. So we went out later, you know, to talk to them, Julie and I, and went out and said, you know, how are you guys doing with the dog? And they said, we're fine. When are we going to get another one? I'm like, whoa, I mean, this is a pretty big emotional moment. I mean, we need to process this a bit. I didn't say that at all. I was glad that that's how they were responding. But the point is, I mean, kids, they cruise through this valley very, very quickly. In fact, I mean, for them, have you noticed how quick kids, you know, resiliently get through this? Their curve looks something like this. I mean, it's like just a short little curve. It's like 10 seconds, all right? And they are through the curve. I mean, this uncanny ability to move through disturbances and be very, very resilient. In fact, I've even said at times that resiliency is kind of like you know, TSA pre-check, if you know what I'm saying. Anybody ever done TSA pre-check? I mean, you still got to go through, you know, TSA, right? I mean, you still have to go through the process. It's just TSA pre-check is a lot quicker and requires, you know, has a lot less stress involved in it. And that's what resiliency does for it. It shortens the curve that we go through as we go through these disturbances. And so as we think about resilience, I want to introduce you to a guy that knew a lot about resilience. In fact, this is a guy who went through a number of things you and I probably will never go through in our lifetime. It's a guy by the name of James. James is kind of a big name because he was Jesus' biological brother, like his literal brother. All right, and so James, he came into the faith game a bit late. He didn't necessarily believe his brother was who everybody said he was or even who Jesus says he was. And who would blame him, right? I mean, you know, your brother's like, hey, I'm God. And I can just picture this going down, right? With their kids, and he's like, hey, James, you know, I'm from God. And James probably like, that's cool. Like, we all are, right? I mean, God created all of us. And Jesus is like, well, no, I mean, like, I am God, right? And James is probably like, that's cool. I mean, whatever you want to think, you run with that. But listen, like, let's not tell the kids at the lunch table. They'll make fun of you all afternoon. That's weird, all right? So, and I think a lot of people thought Jesus was probably kind of weird, initially at least. So James, he grows up, he watches his brother. In their adulthood years, you know, he sees his brother begin to do these miracles and obviously has some powers beyond what other people have. And then one day he predicts his death and his resurrection, and then he pulls it off. And I think in that moment, James is like, you know, maybe he is who he says he is. And so James goes all in on who his brother is, and he begins to follow him as the Son of God. In fact, he's so in on this that he actually gave his life for his belief. In fact, around the years 62 to 66 AD, it's believed that James was martyred for what he believed. In fact, some say he was stoned, others say he was like beaten with a club, all for his belief, because being a follower of Jesus was pretty dangerous at the time. And so James knows something about resiliency. He knows something. I mean, this isn't just a guy who, you know, had a middle school breakup. Not that those aren't a big deal, but like he's dealt with some, you know, pretty big stuff. And so he's writing to these first century Christians right here, and he's trying to explain to them how to handle the trials that they're going to go through. And so here's what he says right here in James 1. He says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters." Love this right here. I mean, he's so warm, right? He's like, "You're my brother, you're my sister, like we're all in this together." He's like, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." And you go, "What? What are you talking about, James?" He's like, "Yeah, you're going to face trials of many kinds. Change, disruption, those are going to be normal things. Those are like kissing cousins to taxes and death. All right, there's no way around them. Everybody's going to experience them in some way, shape, or form. All right, and so trials are kind of like tests, right? And like when you're in school, a test qualifies you for the next grade. So tests actually qualify you for like the next level stuff. And how well you do is going to be determined by your attitude, right? And so this is why he says, consider it pure joy. And so this little verb right here, it's actually two words, these two words, consider it. This is written in Koine Greek, which is kind of a highbrow Greek. I don't really understand it. Most people don't understand it. I didn't study Greek in school. I just have this cool little tool on my computer called the Interlinear Bible. So I can click on the Greek word, and it tells me like exactly what the Greek word means. And so this little word, these two little words, consider it, aren't just like this idea of this casual suggestion, or if you get around to it, you might think about it. No, this is this idea of like lead yourself to where you begin to believe this. It's like, it's this idea of like regard it or so as so. You need to almost like train yourself differently so that you can see that this is true. Like it's got that kind of drive behind it. And so what he's not saying, hey, I'm asking you to be joyful for the trial. That would be kind of weird. He's suggesting that we find joy in the midst of going through the trial because of what God develops in us. Because see, we make ourselves more or less vulnerable based on how we interpret things, right? I mean, think of it this way. When you come up against some big disturbance, even like what we've experienced recently, do you approach that and go, "Oh my gosh, this is so traumatic"? Or do you approach this and go, "Wow, I wonder what God is wanting to teach me and grow me in through this"? See, events, they're only as traumatic as we believe them to be. And you say, "Well, how do you know that's true?" Well, you know, study after study after study has shown this to be true. In fact, there was a longitudinal study done, completed just a few years ago, and it was a study that took place over 20 to 30 years as they tracked these students, these over 600 students from an inner city, and they followed them through life into their adult years, and basically they studied them quantitatively and qualitatively. And the goal of the study was to understand the difference between the kids that were able to succeed in life amidst the bombarding of difficult circumstances in their life, and the students who basically were really impacted and weren't able to be successful based on all the bombarding, you know, overwhelming, avalanching experiences in their life. And what they found was fascinating. They found that the most resilient children have this internal locus of control. Now, one of my favorite authors, Tim Elmore, he's at growingleaders.com/... that never gets old, blog. He defines this internal locus of control. He says this. He says, "An internal locus of control is individuals who assume responsibility for their lives versus an external locus of control, which is individuals who assume an external forces control their lives." Meaning, like, "Well, I couldn't do anything. I was just a victim to everything that was going on around me." And so students who have an internal locus of control, they say, "Hey, I'm actually in control of my future. I mean, yeah, there's certain things I can't decide, but I certainly have an opportunity to shape it. It's I, not my circumstances, that affect my achievements." And so this study found that resilient children were kids who actually saw their own future as something that they could determine, that they could architect, that they could design, and that they could imagine. Resilient kids saw that they could actually have impact in the world and not just be impacted by the world. And this is why I love this video by LeBron James a few moments ago. I mean, talking about this idea of, hey, don't let the experience of the last 10 weeks dictate your life. Use this to grow you because, man, you're gonna do something in the world. Now, we've got a really cool opportunity coming up here in a few weeks. I want to tell you about June 3rd. We're going to have our next COVID conversation. And I am so excited about this one. It's gonna be called How My Disc Profile Influences My Resiliency. And so this is going to be looking at using a leadership assessment, the DISC profile, and Dr. Doug Talley is going to be leading this. Now, Doug Talley does all of our leadership assessments for our staff team here at Crosspoint. Anytime we hire, we run people we're interviewing through a battery of assessments, and he reads these for us, and we determine whether we hire or not based on these assessments. And so this is going to be so cool because whether you are a D, an I, an S, or a C, and if you don't understand the DISC profile, totally cool. You can understand it if you take the assessment. You respond and are resilient in a different way based on your profile. And so in this session, Doug's going to walk us through how our profile responds and how we respond in a resilient way. But he's also going to give us tools based on our profile and how we can grow and taking steps to be more resilient based on our profile. And the cool thing is there's no bad profile. It's just that we all are wired. Our true wiring is different for every single one of us. And so Wednesday, June 3rd at 11:30, it's going to be over the lunch hour, 11:30 to 12:45, we're going to have 75-minute session where you're going to be able to jump on. Now, if you have a DISC profile, it's going to be totally free. If you do not have a DISC profile, then you can get a link. We'll send you a link, and you can buy one for, I believe, about $29, which is greatly discounted. Usually, these are significantly more expensive, but we've got a great deal for you to get this assessment. And one of the guys in my small group this week, when I was talking about this, he told me, went and read his, and he said, man, you will not believe if you have a DISC profile how when you read it's like somebody followed you around for a year and just described what your life looks like. I mean, it is uncannily accurate. So if you have a DISC profile, you can bring it with you. If you don't, we'll send you a link. You can purchase one, and then you can come to this free session to understand how to grow your resiliency based on your DISC profile. And I'm going to tell you something. If you're a leader of a team, if you lead a department, if you lead a business, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a school leader, a principal, teacher, if you're any kind of educator, school counselor, if you lead an organization, a nonprofit, if you lead your family, parents, this can be critically important for you to understand. If you're responsible for leading anyone in being resilient as we come out of this pandemic, you're going to want to be on this COVID conversation because, see, here's the deal. Your resiliency will determine your success in the next season as you reimagine tomorrow. So, man, I hope you'll join us there. See, you can reimagine your future, and you and I have a great opportunity to do this. This is what James is talking about right here. He says, you're going to go through things that are going to grow you. He goes on, verse 3, he says, because you know that the testing of your, and what's the word right there? Yeah, your faith. He says, the testing of your faith. See, when your faith gets tested, it qualifies you for the next level. Now, out of curiosity, how many of us, by show of hands, you can play along at home, how many of you are endurance athletes, just out of curiosity? Oh, yeah, look at that. Whole bunch of you out there. Listen, you guys are special, special people. I wish I was one of you. I am not. You're like a unicorn in the world, in case you were wondering. I used to run mini marathons. I ran 12 consecutive mini marathons down at the 500 Festival. I now run like 4 to 5 miles a day, so I run significantly less. But I tell you what, if you're an endurance athlete, most people don't get you, and rightfully so. Because, see, most athletes are like, man, I just don't get the endurance people, right? Because, like, in my sport, like, we would play, but when we got in trouble or we performed bad, then we had to go and do endurance training. Like, they made us run, and it was punishment. So, like, why would you do that for joy, right? So like, most people don't get you if you're an endurance athlete because I get it, because most people associate punishment with, like, running a lot. But see, here's the thing you'll discover. If you talk to an endurance athlete, what you'll discover is they don't go out and just decide, hey, I'm going to get me one of those 26.2 stickers and put it on my car. They don't just decide one day to do that. It's a very incremental step that they take each and every week. They might start with a 5K and then a 10K and then maybe a half and then a full marathon. Then they may even go to like an Ironman or a Mudder, you know, where they do multiple things. I mean, it's a growing experience where they train themselves. It's about building something. It's about understanding that I'm training and I'm not just suffering through something, but I'm actually persevering to develop something. James says, because you know that the testing and the developing of your faith, it produces perseverance, a persevering faith. And then James says, here's the payoff. There's a payoff at the end of this. He says, let perseverance finish its work. In other words, God's up to something. That's not like the end goal. God's doing something. He's taking you somewhere. Let perseverance finish its work so that, and here's the payoff, that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. He's saying, look, you got to get through the stuff. All right, the temptation is going to be to look at the disruption and try to figure a way out around it. James is like, you can't do that. Don't do that at all. He said the growth happens when you go through it. You got to change your mind. You got to see that not as something that I'm going to fight against, but I'm going to fight for resilience as I go through this thing. And when you do that, you get ready for tomorrow, and you are in a better position to reimagine tomorrow. Now, you guys remember the book, We're Going on a Bear Hunt? Anybody remember the book, Going on a Bear Hunt, Gonna Get a Big One? Remember that book? Remember how it talked about how, you know, we're going on a bear hunt, we're going to get a big one, and we got to go through the brush, and we got to go through the dark forest, and we got to go, you know, down through the river, and we got to go through the icky, sticky mud, and then the snowstorm hits, and we got to go through the snow. And what's the big idea of the story? Do you remember? Yeah, it's you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You can't go around it. What is it? You got to go through it. And I know some of you are like, yeah, you didn't quite get that right, Kurt. That's the Kurt Walters paraphrase, all right? So here's the thing. James is saying the same thing. You can't go around it. When big disturbances happen, you can't go over them. You can fight against them. You got to go through it. And see, here's the thing for you and me. For you and me, everything within us is going to want to try to avoid the disruption. Everything within us is going to want to try to go around or over or under. James is saying, you get better when you go through it. And see, when you go through it, this becomes a catalyst that happens inside of you. It allows you to shrink that curve. It allows you to get through that disruption curve quicker, with more speed and with less collateral damage in your life, because you become more resilient. And you squeeze the curve. So, how do we walk this out this week? Well, I want to give you three things as we close. Three next steps. So go down and hit that connection card, open that back up. You'll see these as next steps under here. And I'm kind of basing these on something that Tim Elmore says. Tim Elmore does a lot of work with millennials and with college athletes, D1 athletes. And he talks a lot. In fact, he talks about three things that finely tuned athletes have that go through a disturbance and then thrive out of it versus those who go through a disturbance and kind of stumble or stutter out of it. And so three things. And so these are our next steps this week. The first one is relationships. He says, resilience always requires a person to be in a circle of support. And so, you know, if you want to grow your resiliency, you're going to have to get in community with people. And you hear us talk ad nauseum around here about getting in a small group. I want to encourage you right now, if you're not in a small group, go to that button right underneath the service stream and click the small group button. You're going to see some of our virtual groups that are meeting online. You're going to see some of our in-person groups. If you want to host a group, we would love for you to host a group. There's a link for you to do that. Click that link. You know, share a little information with us. We'll get back with you. There's no way to have better resilience than to be surrounded by people that are encouraging you forward and going in the same direction. And I can't tell you, in both of my groups that I'm in, I've heard from nearly every single person, I wouldn't have gotten through these past 10 weeks if it wasn't for this group. And it's not like they wouldn't have made it, it's just that they wouldn't have thrived in the midst of all that we've been dealing with. Because being in that community is that important. So don't miss this opportunity to jump into a group today. Second one is resourcefulness. Resourcefulness. The most resilient people are people who are resourceful and value self-discovery. And so I want to, you know, really encourage you to make a next step of jumping into that COVID conversation here on June 3rd. You know, jump into this and learn from your DISC profile how you can be more resilient and you can lead the people around you as we head into this next season. And the next tomorrow after that, resiliency is going to be key. And the third one is responsiveness. Resilient people are flexible. Resilient people adapt to what's going on around them. And the more responsive we are, the more resilient we'll be. And so you need to be in an environment just like this where you get exposed to things that you're not going to hear in any other sector of our world. And so because of that, I want to encourage you to just mark that next step of returning next weekend. All right, would you just say, okay, I'm going to either attend this service in person or I'm going to attend this service online. Just make the decision right now. I'm going to come back. I'm going to continue to be exposed to things that are going to push me and challenge me and grow me. And you may have somebody that you have in your life that you need to invite to join you on an online service or invite to join you at an in-person service? Just this past week, we had somebody in one of my small groups that shared with us, we've been praying for a friend of theirs who has been dealing with the COVID virus, and just this past week, they shared that their friend had passed away. And Sherry said, you know, when we got that news, she said, I just thought, man, last weekend's service, I think she really, you know, the wife of the guy that passed away, I think she really needs to hear this service. I think it might be an encouragement to her. So she sent her the service link. And she told us this in her small group, which is really cool. Well, 2 days later, she sent me an email back and said, hey, here's the response from my friend. She watched our service, and it was such a blessing to her. And I just thought God may use it to meet her in this time of tension and trouble and transition, because that's oftentimes where God works the best. You're not going to believe this. Crazy thing happened. Later that same day, I get a text from my neighbor that lives like five doors down from me. And we're friends with him. Our daughters are our friends, so we hang out periodically. And she said, hey, Kurt, I just wanted to tell you, not sure if you heard, but my dad passed away from COVID this past week. And I just want to thank you for Crosspoint, because somebody from your church cared enough to send my mom your weekend service from last weekend. And it just was such a blessing to her. And I'm going, oh my gosh, this whole thing just came full circle right here. This person in my small group was actually friends with my neighbor's mom, whose husband passed away. Never underestimate the power of an invite. So who do you need to invite this week? Who do you invite to join you in person or on the online platform next weekend? As we lean into this, I'm telling you, God is going to continue to do something amazing. If we lean into this opportunity to allow resilience to be built in us. So we're going to pick up here next week. Hey, let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, man, what a strange, strange time we're in. I don't know if I've ever experienced anything like this in my life. I don't think any of us have. And yet we believe you're doing something in us and through us right now. And so God, I just pray that you help us to lean in this week. I pray that you will help us to lean in, not just for today, but the things that you are developing in us right now for tomorrow. And I just pray that as we let you have your way in our lives, God, that you would develop this persevering faith, and that we would, you know, come to that place of being more mature and more complete, not lacking anything. And God, we know that's your heart's desire. And so I pray for every junior high student, senior high student, college student. I pray for every high school senior that's graduating this week, and every you know, a college senior that's graduating this week, every man and woman. I just pray that you will show them what it means to bounce back as we enter into tomorrow. God, we're probably more aware of our vulnerability than we ever have been in our lives. And yet I pray that you would tattoo on our hearts, God, that as we go through this, this is an opportunity to come out on the other end stronger and thriving. And so I pray that you give us wisdom to know what to do with what we've heard and what you've impressed on our hearts, and the courage to walk it out this week. And we pray these things in your name and according to your character, Jesus.